This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We end our Animal Week series with Temple Grandin, an autistic woman who was profiled by neurologist Oliver Sacks in his book An Anthropologist on Mars. He described her as one of the most remarkable autistic people of all. In spite of her autism, she holds a PhD in animal science, teaches at Colorado State University, and runs her own business. She's worked for many livestock companies, designing humane restraining systems for handling cattle and hogs on ranches and for veterinary procedures and slaughter. One-third of the cattle and hogs in the U.S. are handled in equipment she designed. Her drawings, as well as chairs she co-designed, have been displayed at museums around the country. I spoke with her in 1995, after the publication of her book, Thinking in Pictures, and other reports from My Life with Autism. Autism is a condition of aloneness. Most autistics shut out anything from the outside and insist on sameness and repetition in all of their movements. Dr. Sacks says Grandin's story shows there are forms of autism which don't incapacitate in the expected ways. Grandin owes much of her success to her ability to think in pictures.
I think totally visually. All of my thoughts are like videotapes playing on a VCR in my head. When I design livestock handling equipment, I can test run the system in my head. It was easy for me to figure out how animals think and how animals would react because I think visually. Animals don't think in language, they think in pictures. It's very easy for me to imagine what would it be like to go through a system if you really were a cow, not a person in a cow costume, but really were a cow. And autistic senses and emotions are more like the senses of an animal. My nervous system was hypervigilant. Any little thing out of place, like a water stain on the ceiling, would set off a panic reaction. And cattle are scared of the same thing. They're scared of things like high-pitched noise, sudden clanging and banging, sudden movement, maybe even a little chain that hangs down in the chute and jiggles because it looks out of place. And things that are out of place can mean danger out in the wild.
So you think that being autistic has enabled you to understand cattle better?
I think it has because the way I think and feel is more like how animals think and feel. You know, very sensitive to any little change.
No, like most autistic people, you don't really like to be hugged or touched by other people. But you found a way of getting that comforting, secure feeling from a machine that you designed.
That's right.
You call it a squeeze machine. Some people have called it a hug machine. Would you describe what the machine does?
Well, I can get in it, and it's made with a foam rubber padded sides on it, and I can apply pressure to myself. See, when I was a little kid, mm-hmm. I wanted to feel a nice feeling of being hugged, but the stimulation was too overwhelming. My overly sensitive nervous system just couldn't tolerate it. You know, I got an engulfing tidal wave of stimulation just pouring over me. And when I got into puberty, I started having horrible anxiety attacks, and I found that pressure calmed it. So I built this device I could get into that would apply pressure that would calm down my nervous system. Many autistic children seek pressure. They'll get under mattresses. They'll get under sofa cushions. And at first, I would tend to just pull away from the device. But then gradually, I got to where I could tolerate more and more, you know, being touched. And now I'm, you know, much more desensitized and can tolerate it.
So how does it make you feel when you use it?
Well, it makes me feel very relaxed. It makes me feel gentler. I think that, you know, little babies need to feel the feeling of being held in order to, you know, develop empathy. I found that my empathy with the cattle got much deeper when I actually started touching the animals. I found when I touched the animals, you know, I could calm them down.
If somebody were to hug you now, would you feel as overwhelmed and uncomfortable and afraid as you did when you were young?
Oh, no. Now I actually like it when people hug me. You know, sensory oversensitivities can be desensitized. There are a lot of little autistic kids that pull away and they don't want to be touched. But then you gradually work on touching them. It's sort of like taming a wild animal. At first, the wild animal pulls away. But then after you work on touching it, then a stimulus that was at first overwhelming becomes something that the animal will like. And firm touch is calming, and very light touch sets off a fear reaction. Also, steady pressure is calming, and sudden jerky motion causes agitation and excitement. And the same thing's true with animals, because I've designed a lot of systems for holding animals. In fact, 1/3 of all the cattle in this country, when they go to a meat processing plant, are held in a device I designed. And I found that you have to have just the right amount of pressure. You hold the animal too tight, it hurts and he fights it. If you don't hold him tight enough, he doesn't feel held and he fights it. There's an optimal amount of pressure. Also, slow, steady pressure is calming, and if you do it too quickly, the animal will get excited.
Is the hug machine that you created for yourself based on cattle restraint devices that you had seen?
Well, yes, because when I was 18 years old, I had a constant state of anxiety all the time. It was like panic attacks. I felt like first radio interview nerves all the time for absolutely no reason. You know, I was in complete nervous system flight, you know, as if a lion was stalking around, you know, ready to get me. And I was desperate to get relief. And I watched when the cattle went in the squeeze chute to hold them for their vaccinations. Some of the animals would sort of just relax. So then I talked my aunt into letting me try it. And for about an hour afterwards, I was a lot calmer. In fact, pressure is used by a lot of therapists with autistic children. They'll roll them up in mats, they'll get them under beanbag chairs, and it helps to relax them and calm down the nervous system so it's easier to work on things like learning how to talk.
So your aunt had a cattle ranch?
Yes, she did.
So after you realized how comforting the pressure of this restraining device could be, did that lead you to want to work with animals?
Well, that's one of the things that got me interested, because I started going out to the feed yards and watching how the cattle reacted. And then this was about 20 years ago, and so I wanted to learn more about how the cattle reacted to things, so I got down into the chutes with my camera and took pictures through the chutes to get a cow's eye view. In fact, that was going to be the original title for my book, but somebody in the marketing department didn't like it very much. Got down there and looked through the chutes, and I began to see the sort of things that would bother the cattle: a shadow, a little thread out of place, any little thing, a coat or hat hanging on the fence, and see the things that would make them balk.
Well, you've really devoted your life to creating more humane conditions for animals and more humane, pain-free ways of slaughtering them. Do you feel like you empathize with cattle?
Well, I know how cattle feel. And a lot of people, you know, when they think about the slaughter plan, all they can think about is, well, the cattle have got to know they're being slaughtered. Well, the things that scare the cattle are not the same things that we worry about. There's several slaughter plants in Colorado. I go, you know, visit them fairly often. And at one of them, the cattle don't like a little chain that's sometimes hanging down in the chute. They'll watch that little chain. I was at the plant one day and a train went rushing by, and the cattle were much more scared of the train than they were of going into the slaughter plant. You've got to have proper lighting. They won't go in if they can't see high-pitched noise. Sometimes just changing the plumbing on the hydraulic system to get rid of high-pitched noise will make the cattle go in much easier. It's easy for me to figure out how the cattle think, because they think the way I do. In fact, the title of my book finally got made to be Thinking in Pictures. And that's the way animals think. They think in pictures.
Tell us about one of the designs you came up with for a more humane slaughterhouse.
Well, I've done a lot of work on putting in curved chute systems, and one of the reasons this works is because the cattle can't see people up ahead. They just sort of go round and round and round like the Guggenheim Museum. And then I designed a device called the Center Track Restrainer System, and it replaced older type conveyor systems and holds the cattle in a more comfortable manner, and they just follow through. They just keep following the animal in front of them, and they just go in there and they're shot and they don't know what's happened. Also want to emphasize the importance of good management. You can have very good equipment in a slaughter plant, but you got to have management to go along with it. The slaughter plant manager has got to control the behavior of his employees.
When you're in a slaughterhouse, is the smell of blood and the sight of the cattle lining up on their way to slaughter, is that upsetting to you?
Well, if things are going right and they're just walking in calmly, it's not upsetting. You know, people forget nature's very harsh. I mean, when a lion rips apart an animal and just dines on it while the animal's still alive, that's not very nice for the animal. And, you know, if I was an animal, I think I'd rather go to a decent slaughter plant than have a lion dine on me while I'm still alive.
You seem to really understand cattle and to be able to know what's going to disturb them and upset them. Do you feel you have the same insights about other people?
Well, you know, it's easy to figure out cattle because I think visually, and my nervous system reacts the way cattle do. But there are a lot of, you know, social things that go on. I just had to learn by, you know, rote memory. I never realized how visual my thinking was until I started talking to other people about how they thought. I mean, I used to think everybody thought in videos, and now I found out that some people think in words and just sort of vague pictures. See, all of my thinking goes from specific to general. Like, for example, my concept of what a dog is not a generalized concept, but I see a whole bunch of pictures in my mind of very specific dogs. And with specific to general thinking, you know, I have to just learn social skills by example. I have to learn social skills like a child would learn in school lessons. I'm sort of like a Data on Star Trek.
My guest is Temple Grandin. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back to our interview with Temple Grandin. She's an autistic woman who's a very successful designer of humane restraining systems for cattle and hogs. You understand cattle so well. What do you find very mysterious about other people?
Well, my emotions are not as complex. I have a difficult time understanding how somebody can be jealous and love somebody at the same time. I definitely have emotions, but fear is one of my main emotions. And, of course, that's one of the main emotions of animals. They see a little chain or something jiggling, or they see a shadow looks out of place. They get a fear reaction. And I just don't, it just isn't part of my experience to, like, swoon over some guy because I think he's really cute. When I was in high school, my roommate would, like, practically faint on the floor when Bob, the science teacher, walked into the room. I mean, and she'd be swooning on the floor when she was watching the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan show. And I go, yeah, they're cute, but I'm not going to faint on the floor over it.
Do you understand love?
Well, I understand caring. And see, most of my relationships are more intellect. I have a number of friends that I think I've been able to help them out, you know, on some counseling sort of things. And to me, love is caring. In fact, my mother wrote one time that love was making something grow. I mean, that's sort of the way I look at it, but it's more of an intellectual thing. And when I see people abuse cattle, it makes me very angry, and I want to, you know, change things.
Do you feel like you're missing out on something special by not being in love and not understanding that emotion?
I'm missing out on some things, but I also have talents that other people don't have. I don't want to give up visual thinking. In fact, Oliver Sacks asked me in his book, Anthropologist on Mars, if you could, you know, suddenly snap your fingers and not be autistic, would you do that? No, I wouldn't, because I don't want to give up visual thinking. Visual thinking makes me a very clear thinking gives me very, very clear thinking in scientific and technical things. To me, a lot of the highly verbal thinkers are very fuzzy thinkers, and they're not logical.
When did you realize that you were different from most other people?
Well, as a little kid, I had a really odd lack of awareness that I was different. You know, and even on my visual thinking, I mean, I was an adult before I realized that other people did not have the extensive visual thinking that I had. And I'd go out on a job where we'd be designing equipment, and I'd go, how could the engineers be so stupid? Wouldn't they know that's not going to work? Well, I just assumed everybody had visual thinking. You know, now when I've, like, carefully interviewed people about how they think, I've realized it's not stupidity that caused them to design it wrong. They simply don't have visual thinking. I mean, some engineers definitely do have it. There are non-autistic people that have visual thinking, but there's also some people out there that have very limited visual thinking.
Do you watch movies and television a lot and feel like you learn a lot from other people by watching them portrayed?
Well, Oh, I like to watch things like, you know, the news magazine shows. I really like listening to things like, you know, All Things Considered and Fresh Air, because I get lots of information from those things.
What's it like for you to listen to the radio and have words without pictures?
Well, I make the pictures. As the person talks, I make the pictures. And if they're talking about something where I can't make pictures, then it does not get remembered very well.
What if the conversation is about something pretty abstract, about ideas?
It depends what the idea is. You know, because a lot of abstract ideas I convert to pictures. Like somebody asked me the other day, how do you visualize eternity, the concept of eternity? Well, I just see Star Trek and, you know, looking out the front window of the Starship Enterprise and just seeing space going out there forever and ever and ever. I think about the Hubble telescope that was built to look to the ends of the universe. Those are the sort of things that are that pictures that form my concept of eternity. Or you take a concept like a truth. Well, I think of things that were examples of truth, like reading a newspaper article about a man who returned a wallet with all the money in it.
Right. How do you live now? Do you live alone?
Yeah, I just live by myself. Basically, my work is my life. Uh-huh. And that's true for other successful autistic adults. There's some other autistic adults that, you know, doing well in jobs. One of the best kind of job is freelance work. I do all my work freelance. I can go into a plant, get the system designed, and get out of there before I get into some hassle with the people there. And an autistic person has to sell their work rather than themselves. I recommend to other autistic people, develop a talent and then make a portfolio of your work, because you're going to have to bypass the personnel office and show it right to the art department or the computer department.
Are people ever reluctant to work with you because you are autistic?
Well, in the beginning, they really thought I was really nerdy, and I remember one time being in an agricultural engineering meeting, and they thought I was really, you know, weird. And then I pulled out a drawing that I had done of a cattle handling facility, and the engineers went, "You drew that?" They just couldn't believe that, you know, this weird nerd could draw such a nice drawing. But as soon as they saw the drawing and they saw how nice it was, then they started having a different attitude towards me.
Do you feel that as time goes by, you're becoming less autistic?
Well, you keep learning how to get more and more normal. It's sort of like Data on Star Trek. You know, Data keeps trying to learn more about how people act. And I remember watching a Star Trek, and I wish I could remember the name of the episode, but Data was trying to date a girl. And it was a total disaster, because he told her that she was beautiful in scientific terms, like saying, you know, you have a lovely, smooth epidermis. Well, that just doesn't work.
Temple Grandin recorded in 1995 after the publication of her memoir, Thinking in Pictures and Other Reports from My Life with Autism. She continues to work with students at Colorado State University and is currently revising one of her books on livestock handling. She's been consulting with fast food restaurants on implementing animal welfare standards for the slaughter plants they work with. Our Animal Week series was produced by Kathy Wolf. This is Fresh Air.